It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 39 degrees here at the station, under sunny skies. And we're looking for more sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon. Northwest winds to 25, should come down to 15 this afternoon. For tonight, a slight chance of rain and snow after 3 a.m. as these clouds start to roll in overnight. Low around 30 tonight, west wind to 10. For tomorrow, 20% chance of rain before 9 a.m. Partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 36. Those west winds continuing and increasing to 30 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, dogs and people are accidentally caught in traps in Alaska. There's a way to help avoid that. A Fairbanks business has won the Golden Carrot Award. We'll tell you what that is. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks has completed its first semester competing in intercollegiate esports. More on those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Dale Willman. President Biden this afternoon made another push for Americans to get vaccinated against COVID-19.
Almost everyone who has died from COVID-19 in the past many months has been unvaccinated. Unvaccinated. But if you're among the majority of Americans who are fully vaccinated, and especially if you've gotten the booster shot, that third shot, you have much less reason to worry.
But if you're not vaccinated, he said, you put your friends and family at risk. Speaking from the White House, Biden unveiled plans for the government to buy 500 million rapid coronavirus tests that will then be distributed for free to Americans who request them. Those tests will be available starting in January. Maryland is now posting statewide COVID numbers after a cyber attack put its database out of commission for 2 weeks. The outage left many in the dark about COVID trends in their communities. Meanwhile, as Mary Rose Madden reports, thousands waited in lines in Baltimore today to get free home COVID tests at public libraries.
Before the branch even opened, the line at one Baltimore library wrapped around the building and then some. 37-year-old Molly Porter was in the middle of it and says the database outage isn't the only problem right now.
And of course the numbers help, but it's like data is one thing, but action's another. And I would like to see more things like this, where these tests are made free to sort of break the chain of infection, if that makes sense.
She's frustrated, she says, because the federal and state governments knew a surge was coming. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has COVID himself, but yet here she is, walking away, no test in hand. They ran out in less than an hour. For NPR News, I'm Mary Rose Madden in Baltimore.
Union workers at the Kellogg's Company have approved a new contract with the cereal maker. As WDET's Quinn Kleinfelder reports, the move ends a more than two-month-long strike.
About 1,400 Kellogg's workers in four states walked off the job in October, protesting what they called long work hours and a two-tier wage system. The new five-year contract keeps the two-tier system, but the head of the union local in Kellogg's Battle Creek headquarters, Trevor Beidelman, says members' objections softened after the company vowed to keep cereal on store shelves by using permanent replacement workers.
That is the single biggest issue that we have as far as the threat and the scare, the fear, really, that people had.
Numerous politicians, including President Biden, described the idea of Kellogg's replacing union workers as deeply troubling. For NPR News, I'm Quinn Kleinfelter in Detroit.
Republican Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania has refused a request for him to be interviewed by the House panel investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection. In a statement, Perry called the probe illegitimate. Stocks overseas bounced back after a Monday fall-off on Wall Street at the close. The Dow was up 562 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
At least a half a dozen dogs and one person were accidentally caught in traps in Alaska last winter, and at least one of those accidents killed a dog. That's according to a report from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, a nonprofit that advocates for more trapping restrictions. The report, called Map the Trap, relied on dozens of submissions from the public about trap encounters. Several described close encounters with traps near trails and roadways, and one man said he was pulled off his motorbike after a snare caught his foot on a trail in the Mat-Su. Alaska Wildlife Alliance Director Nicole Schmidt says the organization realized there was a need to compile anecdotal evidence about trap encounters earlier this year.
There is no centralized database for trap encounters, be it through ADF&G or state troopers or wildlife troopers. Each agency, if they do track it, is tracking it within their own bubble of authority. And so the goal with this project was to really understand the scope of trap encounter issues.
Schmidt says the group hopes to continue Map the Trap next year and is asking the public to submit their reports at akwildlife.org. That's akwildlife.org. A Fairbanks business has won a statewide award for promoting Alaska-grown produce. KUAC's Mary Auld has this report.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
State Division of Agriculture officials presented a 3-foot-long golden carrot plaque to Erica Moeller in a ceremony at her store, The Roaming Root Cellar. The business was selected for making creative displays of Alaska-grown produce and supporting Alaskan growers.
Our mission is to connect the community with local goodness.
Moeller started her business in 2020. She sells exclusively Alaska-grown and made products, from meat and vegetables to earrings and artwork. At the ceremony, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, Brent Goodrum, commended Moeller's work.
I'm quite inspired by your enthusiasm of jumping in and helping connect our local farmers with the community and providing a great outlet for them to help ensure we've got great food security in the state.
Roaming Root is the first business in the interior and the first small business to win the award since the contest started 5 years ago. Moeller says she started the business because she noticed local farmers didn't have a way to sell their produce outside of the short farmers market season.
I think for me, helping bridge that gap between producer and consumer was really, really important.
Farmer Sam Knapp sells produce to Roaming Root. Knapp owns Offbeat Farm in Fairbanks, where he grows crops like carrots and squash that can be stored and sold during the winter months. He says working with Roaming Root makes his business more stable.
I can have like a reliable sales outlet for, you know, a certain amount of produce. So it really helps me in my planning process.
Moeller says she hopes Roaming Root can support more Alaska growers and makers as the business grows. And it's been growing rapidly. When Moeller started Roaming Root, she sold goods out of a school bus. Within 5 months, business was so robust she moved into a storefront. She's expanded into a larger retail area since.
The excitement around this has blown me away. I never envisioned this store becoming what it has become.
One of Moeller's immediate goals is to make local food more accessible to all Fairbanks residents. She says some of her prices are comparable to those at chain supermarkets, and she's working toward being able to accept SNAP. For KUAC, I'm Mary Auld.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks has completed its first semester competing in intercollegiate esports.
The short version is that esports is just the intersection of gaming and competition.
UAF esports coordinator Mike Jewell says the games and formats are diverse and evolving.
So in some cases that means team games where you've got teams of five players against another team of five players playing a particular game. Sometimes it's individual people competing, playing Tetris for the high score. I kind of think of esports as kind of being a broad capture-all, kind of like the Olympics isn't just an event. It covers a bunch of events.
Jewell describes an inclusive UAF program with opportunities in both well-established and lesser-known games.
There are a lot of the big titles that people might be familiar with, like League of Legends and things like that we compete in. But then even when there's smaller titles that people people are interested in. If there's enough interest and people are serious about competing, we try to find an outlet for them and make sure they get an opportunity to participate in their game of choice.
Unlike traditional college sports, gaming is not regulated by the NCAA. Jewel says that's in part because most participants have won cash prizes playing in tournaments before college.
If they've earned money in the tournament when they were in high school or something, they're becoming eligible by NCAA standards. So the NCAA doesn't govern it. So there's a lot of just kind of like a lot of various leagues. There isn't just like one league you can join.
UAF opened an esports center in the Wood Center last spring. The facility, funded by a 10-year, $500,000 gift from GCI, includes 12 specialized gaming computers and 4 large-screen TVs.
But does not matter if it's, you know, lunchtime on a Tuesday or evening on a weekend. There's just always people down here playing games.
Jewel emphasizes that the UAF program includes highly competitive intercollegiate gamers, as well as students who just play for fun with friends. He says, unlike some other colleges in the country, UAF has fully embraced esports. He says the Esports Center is a popular stop for prospective students touring campus, and UAF began offering esports scholarships this year. Well, the ongoing pandemic has extended often already longer wait times for goods shipped to Alaska. KUAC's Robin has this report.
You may have been hearing a lot about the supply chain, but what is it really and how does it affect Alaska? In a presentation to Fairbanks North Scarborough Economic Development staff, Department of Labor economist Karina Weibold described the supply chain like this.
Where does it start? Then who has it? Then who has it? Then who has it? And ultimately, how does it get to the consumer?
Weibold says nearly everything we wear and use and a lot of what we eat has been disrupted by the pandemic, either by the inavailability of raw materials or manufacturing and transportation delays.
We are in a really integrated economy worldwide where we're all participating together in this movement of goods and materials.
She pointed to profit-driven changes in the last decade or two where manufacturers try to be as nimble as possible to respond to changes in the worldwide market.
Being lean and mean and working on receiving a signal that something is needed or ready and then going to get it with your response as opposed to setting things up in a more prepared method.
That means not paying to warehouse either raw materials nor an inventory of finished goods and making last-minute shipping arrangements, an approach, she says, that works as long as everything is in place.
Then once things start to be gummed up, then we don't have the ability to get the whole machinery moving.
Weibold says the disruption has hit Alaska in different ways, but one of the most obvious is lumber. She used an example of an Alaska contractor in the home building business.
A 2,000 square foot house costing about $7,000 in lumber. So let's just think about that. Normal size house, $7,000 in lumber pre-pandemic. We got to the summer and the same amount of wood was going to be costing $27,000.
Some of that was disruptions in lumber production and some of it was transportation related. Lumber prices have driven increases in Alaska housing costs that will likely continue.
These were the biggest global supply chain issues that we have seen outside of war.
Weibold says the pandemic drove a perfect storm of short supply while we were increasing our demand.
Alaskans were at home a great deal in the last 2 years. People are working from home, they're isolating. So we started spending on things that making our kitchens more efficient, that were making our home offices more efficient, that were making our homes more comfortable, that were keeping our kids entertained. So there's a decrease in the supply of goods because of what was happening globally. At the same time, there was an increase in the demand for a lot of goods because of the way that we were spending our time and money.
Entering the third year of the pandemic, the availability of vaccines is allowing raw material production and manufacturing output to begin catching up in some sectors, while shipping backlogs remain an issue. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Well, Kodiak wasn't the only town having a boat parade. Wrangell's annual boat parade lit up the Zamovia Strait over the weekend. KSTK's Sage Smiley watched the parade from the water and has this report.
Good evening. It is 6 o'clock. Let the boat parade begin. If you're in a place...
The Nolani is festooned in lights. Red and white strands run up and over the outriggers from bow to stern. Multicolored lights run the circumference of the boat, and a string of white icicles keeps hitting boat passengers in the face as they walk in and out of the cabin. It's bitingly cold out in the Zamovia Strait, and as the 42-foot aluminum hull of the Noelani chugs into view of Wrangell's city dock, headlights from the cars of parade watchers join rippling moonlight on the water. The boat isn't usually this dressed up.
We fish salmon and shrimp and halibut.
Captain Chris Guggenbickler stands at the stern, attaching orange electronic fuse wire to a firework. It's his second year participating in the boat parade. Friend and local artist Brenda Schwarzjäger and her husband John Jaeger got him to outfit the boat last year.
John and Brenda got me started on this.
Y'all got a boat than we do.
Wires in place, Guggenbickler calls out a warning.
Watch your ears!
Around 15 passengers on the Noelani rush forward to watch the firework explode in a golden shower above the boat. About a minute later, there's an answering volley from another lit-up boat, the Pacific Sea. This year's third parade participant, the Rainforest Islander Ferry, is also wrapped in lights, but has left the pyrotechnics at home. Clay Hammer organizes Wrangell's boat parade and drops off a VHF radio at the radio station so the chatter from boats can be broadcast along with Christmas tunes for the duration of the parade. This year, though, Hammer says he's glad to be a little further off the water, not in his own boat.
Yeah, plus it's really small. It's only like maybe, what, half the length of this boat? It's a little tiny jet boat. I made it last year and the year before that one and the year before that one, but it was really nasty out here. The boat was just jumping and bobbing. It was an adventure.
The annual Christmas boat parade started in the 1970s with Wrangell commercial fisherman and physician Doc Davenport. After Davenport retired in 2012, the tradition languished. But at some point, Hammer took over.
Somebody just said, hey, will you do it? And so I did it. And I've been kind of, you know, heading it up ever since, but it's really a collaborative effort. You just put a bug in a bunch of people's ears and then everybody jumps in. And so it's definitely a group effort, a community thing. People like Goog stepping up and just knocking it out of the park. Literally. Fire in the hole!
As the parade organizer, Hammer also kicks off the VHF radio greetings from the boats to the public.
We got the boat parade going here, and we got three pretty well-lit boats out here. We got all kinds of fireworks and stuff going off tonight.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Enjoy the show. It's cold out here.
Yeah, I didn't get a memo on bringing all the bombs along, but it's been a good show anyhow, and Merry Christmas to everybody. Merry Christmas to everybody in Wrangell from the Pacific Sea and crew. So thanks for coming out. Thanks for coming out and watching us there.
Do it.
Merry Christmas!
After greetings, it's back to songs and fireworks. Aboard the Noelani, the crew tucks into clam chowder, chili, and honey-glazed ham. Denise Stewart helped decorate the Noelani for this year's boat parade.
It was snowing and it was freezing.
But Stewart says it was worth braving the elements to participate in the long-standing tradition.
We did it last year, and it was a bang up of a good time. So this year, we are looking forward to it. There's no place like Wrangell. Over the holidays, it's such a festival.
The boats turn north towards the point of the island in Petroglyph Beach, firing the occasional sparkly salvo, then south towards Shoemaker Harbor before they head back to their slips. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Kaboom! Like a thousand little birds, man.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. It's a feast of fishes. A look at holiday seafood traditions after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
For centuries, seafood has taken a special spot on holiday tables all over the world. Unlike the traditional green bean casserole, eating different fish dishes is served up with meaning. One of the oldest traditions stemming back to Roman times is the Feast of Seven Fishes, an Italian Christmas Eve celebration by Catholics to honor the birth of baby Jesus. The number seven is considered the perfect number and is repeated 700 times in the Bible, making the Feast of Seven Fishes a symbolic Christmas celebration. Dining can include 7 to up to 13 different seafood dishes as a way to refrain from eating meat or milk on holy days. One of the most famous dishes is bacalao, or salted codfish. Celebrants also feast on fried fish, such as smelt and calamari. In other countries around the world, eating lutefisk is a Christmas tradition in Norway and Sweden. It's made from dried white fish, usually cod, that's prepared with lye in a long series of water treatments until the fish becomes jelly-like. This dish goes back to the days of the Vikings. In Japan, consuming prawns on New Year's is to ensure long life, and eating herring roe is to boost fertility. Feasting on pickled herring at midnight in Germany, Poland, and parts of Scandinavia is done in hopes of bringing in a bountiful catch. And in China, a fish is served whole, symbolizing a good beginning and end in the coming year. One seafood that isn't so popular in the holiday celebrations in many parts of the world is lobster, because it swims backwards. No matter what your seafood favorites are, include them in your holiday meals. You could be starting your own family tradition, and you'll be giving back to the fishermen locally and around the world. Happy holidays from Alaska Fish Radio. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods in Kodiak. I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 21st day of December, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:52. It will set again at 4:23. That will give us 6 hours and 31 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 46. That was set in 1921 and 1970. And our record low was 5, set in 1957 and in 2018. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:38 this afternoon. That will be a 9.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:31 p.m. That will be a minus tide, a minus half a foot. Our next high tide will be at 4:11 a.m. and be 7 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning on the east side at 9:14 a.m., a 3.5-foot tide. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 3:09 this afternoon. That will be a 14.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at exactly 10 p.m. That will be minus 9/10 of a foot. Your next high tide will be at 4:24 a.m. and be 12.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:57 a.m. of 5 feet. Looking at our marine weather, from Marvin Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning today, northwest wind 35 knots, should diminish to 25 knots this afternoon. For south of Dangerous Cape, northwest 25 will diminish to 15 in the afternoon, seas to 12 feet. For tonight, west wind to 25 knots and seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, west wind to 20 knots, increasing to 30 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 8 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for tomorrow. West wind to 30 knots today, should come down to 20 knots this afternoon, seas building to 8 feet, should subside to 5 feet this afternoon. For tonight, west wind to 15 knots and seas to 4 feet. But for tomorrow in the Shelikof, west wind to 15 knots will come up to the southwest at 35 knots in the afternoon, seas building to 10 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. And for Wednesday night, west wind to 35 knots and seas to 9 feet. The Kodiak City Council will hold a special meeting today. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the link and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you wish printed meeting materials or have questions, contact the clerk at 486-8636. Bring your friends and family to the Lutik Museum this holiday season to enjoy their exhibits. Matson has generously sponsored free admission for all Kodiak through December 23rd. Everyone is welcome. And the Lutik Museum is open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 p.m., and located at 215 Mission Road. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary have put up their Angels of Love holiday trees at the hospital. Each angel placed on the trees bears the name of a person being honored or remembered. The angels remain on the trees through the holiday season and can be obtained for a $10 donation. All donations are placed in the Auxiliary's Scholarship Fund to offer scholarships for individuals pursuing a career in healthcare. You can make your donation at the hospital admissions desk. Were you born in 1957? Did you know you will be eligible for Medicare starting in January? There were over 4 million babies born in 1957, making this the largest number of baby boomers born in one year. You have a 7-month initial enrollment period when you turn 65 to sign up for Medicare. It's 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of your birth, and 3 months after. This initial enrollment period is very important, even if you still plan to work and have employer-based insurance. Please contact the Senior Center at 486-6181 for more information concerning this important information. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association will offer 2 fishing vessel drill conductor classes in Kodiak on December 27th and 28th. That's 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with drills and a pool session on December 29th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Classes will meet at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center, 118 Trident Way. The cost for each class is $125 for commercial fishermen. Interested mariners may register online at www.amsea.org, or you can call 907-747-3287. The class will cover cold water survival skills, EPIRBS, signal flares, mayday calls, man overboard recovery, firefighting, flooding and damage control, dewatering pumps, immersion suits and PFDs, helicopter rescue, life rafts, abandoned ship procedures, emergency drills, and an in-the-water practice session. AMSI's fishing vessel drill conductor workshops meet the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. Their conductor class is an excellent opportunity for commercial fishermen and other mariners to gain hands-on training with marine safety equipment and learn best practices for surviving emergencies at sea. I can attest to that personally. Again, those classes will be held December 27th through 29th. If you're interested, sign up at www.amsea.org or call 907-747-3287. The Coast Guard has experienced various VHF outages in southeast and south central Alaska. Extra caution is advised in areas serviced by VHF towers. Repairs are ongoing, but due to extreme weather and remote locations, intermittent outages are expected to continue in various locations in both southeast and south-central Alaska. Therefore, mariners are reminded that due to mountainous terrain and limited VHF coverage, even with fully operational VHF sites, the Coast Guard cannot hear VHF calls in all areas, and mariners should have a secondary means of communication on board, file a float plan with a trusted person, and carry safety equipment on board in the event you are in a survival situation. As always, all boaters should carefully evaluate their ability to assist distressed mariners and always relay any heard distressed calls to the U.S. Coast Guard.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.